Ferrell's performance has a restrained, melancholy tenderness that suffuses the series. Excellent Alliteration by Laura Miller of Slate. She's talking about Sugar, brand new show on Apple Plus. It's an 8-part. Is it a limited series? Is it a dramatic series? Not totally sure, but it's 8 parts. I've seen 4 so far, new episodes every Friday. I think it's sensational. I'm loving it. I can't wait to tell you all about it. And it fits in line because it's all about film noir. So of course I'm really going to love it. As far as our old movies this week, recently I was on the Dan Lapidus show on Thursday. How joyous was that, Chris? No David Sampson.
Oh, so much room.
Oh, he was traveling, so I had so much room to expand my thoughts. Normally I'm so quick after getting out of here. I'm like, oh my God, I can answer. I can take a retee. I can give an additional thought. So at one point, I'm not sure how, you teed me up on the Steve Martin doc, because obviously you did it on Cinephile. And then I said, I wish there'd been more Bowfinger in the Steve Martin doc. And then Dan is a big Bowfinger guy. He goes, I think it might be arguably Eddie Murphy's best movie. I said, wow, I love that, your best performance, he said. And I said, oh my God, listen, I love Eddie Murphy. But at the top of my head, I said, Coming to America, Trading Places, 48 Hours. But I said, yeah, Bowfinger top 5. We can find a slot in there. So this week on Cinephile, inspired by the Dan Lebitard show, we'll do both Coming to America and Bowfinger, 2 of Eddie Murphy's top 5 movies. And as I said recently, because Curb Your Enthusiasm has ended, I wanted to replay the interview I did with Jeff Garland. This is probably 6 or 7 years ago now. But with Curb coming to an end, he's a wonderful guy. He came to the studios in ESPN. We had a lovely conversation. So a little re-air there of Jeff Garland. A little hockey talk. Florida Panthers. Now, somebody messaged me because I think you're catering to that audience. And I said, let me be clear here. I'm a Flyers fan. The Flyers didn't make it. The teams that I hate at this point are Rangers, Bruins, Leafs. So I would never cheer for those teams. So naturally, the Panthers, I have no animosity with the Panthers. They have no rivalry with the Flyers. And of course, I'm going to cheer for my buddies. So I am all in on the Cats. 3-2 win over the Lightning. You were there. Talk to me.
Dan was saying it earlier. This is like the most championship-ready team outside of like LeBron Heat 3. I don't think South Florida has ever sent a team into the playoffs with these kind of expectations at any of the major sports.
Like, think this of that statement. Repeat that statement. Never before. Like, this is bigger than the Heat. Like the big three.
Right. Well, I wouldn't say bigger, but like that was a time when we would enter a playoffs and everyone thought we had a shot. Usually, correct. Other Heat teams, Marlins teams in the past. No, yeah. We're never the team that everyone's picking going into the playoffs. We're right. The team that's just barely making the playoffs. And this year, like, it just feels like the style of hockey, like Panther style of hockey, is an actual thing that people like. It's that's the coolest part of all this, is that we have an identity. Like, there's a Panther forecheck. Roy's been talking about the forecheck for 20 years, and we're finally relevant in this department. It's just a fun time down here, man. And you can feel the buzz in Sunrise. Like, I know people make fun of how it's not really Miami. It's like not even Fort Lauderdale. It's way out west. But there is a buzz around that arena right now.
So my buddy Zach and I, we went to the Flyers game, as I told you last week. Flyers beat the Devils 1-0, second last game of the year. He goes the cup final no matter what. He's such a huge hockey fan. And I said to him, pulling for the Panthers, and he gave a roll of the eyes. He goes, I go, what? He goes, Sunrise? I go, because it's not exactly, I'm in South Beach. And I go, but it's not that bad. I mean, and you're telling me the environment is pretty hopping.
No, it's a great atmosphere for a game. I mean, to his point, he's, you know, 25 minutes away from Fort Lauderdale Beach. Yeah. Like, it's a good 20, 25 minutes away from kind of anything you'd want to do.
Yeah, that was his thing. He's like, obviously I'm there for the hockey, but I'm like, I'm not exactly, you know, scoping out the scene on the beach. I'm like, well, whatever. You need 20, 25 minutes, you're there. Come on, man. It's awesome. It's still a great time. So we'll see. But I'm obviously rooting for you guys. Hopefully get it done. You were at the game. Mike Ryan as well. Obviously Roy's always there.
Whole crew. You're there. Season ticket holders. Me and Mike, we're with the common folk. Roy's up in the press box. But
who is the least into it of the crew? Lebitard, Stu, Jess, Lucy?
Billy is pretty...
Billy, into it. Billy, okay.
Lucy's not really into hockey at all.
No.
I would say those two, probably.
I just always think it's a funny read, like when you come in and you talk to somebody and you're enthusiastic about something, but you have to register their enthusiasm. And you very quickly realize they're not as enthusiastic as me or as much as I was hoping for.
Like, see, Billy's the worst, though, because when he's not interested in something, he won't just sit it out. He wants to, like, undercut.
It's like, you know, you golf, I don't golf. You've never told me about your golf game. But if you listen, I would just listen to be polite. Similar to me with tennis. I saw Cody had a good match. I'm like, okay, you would just be polite. I'm like, okay, I don't give a crap about your tennis game. I get that you're into it. You're excited about it. So Billy's the type who just doesn't even, he won't even play the game.
He'll start questioning how much, like, oh, you're not actually, Roy's been there. Like, he'll start trying to, like, pull me and Mike and Roy apart. Like, Roy, can you imagine these guys are, like, they're fake new Panthers fans. It's like, Billy, no, just let us be.
Exactly. I never like people, and maybe I do that sometimes, they, like, question the intensity of the fandom. I'll give you an example. So my brother is an Oilers fan. Again, I became a Flyers fan, for those who don't know. 85 and 87, of course, he cheered for Gretzky and the Oilers. We're brothers, I just cheered against him. They played the Flyers. So that's how I became a Flyers fan. So I said, you know, through thick and thin, I watched my guys. They haven't made the playoffs in 4 years. He doesn't watch Oilers regular season games. And now he's texting me like, oh, Oilers look good. I go, are you seriously? Like, now he's going to watch like every playoff game. He's going to be locked in. I go, the thing about sports is, you and I know this, you get more into it the more you put into it. If you suffer, the reward is even greater. Yes?
But when you get aggressive, like if someone comes at me, then all of a sudden I'm going to like, you better not come at me if you're not watching.
Correct.
Like, you know what I mean? It's like, I kind of see true. Both sides to this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, George Carlin has a great bit about how he's a bandwagon sports fan. He's like, people get rip of me. He's like, what do you mean? He's like, well, my team suck. I let them do their thing, and then they come back. I'm back in again. Like, why would I waste my time? It's actually pretty funny. Maybe he's got something to it. But I'm cheering for my brother for the Oilers and for you for the Panthers. Oilers, Panthers, Stanley Cup final. Of course, I cheer for the Canadian teams, Canucks, Jets, but that's not impacting you. Those are in the Western Conference.
But not the Leafs.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm definitely very anti-Leafs because I have so many friends who are Leafs fans. Well, we see you should have been a Leafs fan. Like, screw you. Oh, the Flyers haven't won a cup. Now they're the Leafs. Flyers haven't won a cup since 75. Leafs haven't won since 67. So both of us are losers. At least I've seen my team in the cup final. 97, 2010. You know, like I know what it's like to have my team be in the finals. Leafs haven't even sniffed the finals. Anyways, that's our hockey talk for today. We needed more hockey talk last Thursday, but you could tell Dan did two questions and he felt like that was more than sufficient. So I said, fine. Let's do a little self-congratulatory pat on the back news here. The Sports Emmy Award nominations came out. Best Daily Sports Studio Show. The nominees are SportsCenter, as expected. Pardon the Interruption, almost always wins. NBA Countdown, NFL Live, and MLB Tonight. Big.
Yes.
Big for all of us at the network. And specifically, you know, this is a recognition, obviously, our great producers, researchers, directors, the whole team. But here's how it really pertains to me. MLB Tonight last won the Daily Sports Studio Show Emmy back in 2019. Now, I started in 2019, but that was for the year 2018, of course. If you win the 2024 Oscars, it's for the year 2023. So a lot of the guys that I work with are like, yeah, I've got three Emmys or I've got four Emmys. I'm like, yeah, I don't have a physical Emmy. And they're like, really? And I said, well, I did win an Emmy once, but it sounds like it's a made-up category. It was me and Ben Lyons, and we won, but it was the Oscars All Access was our show. And we won. You ready for this category? Outstanding creative achievement in interactive media within an unscripted program.
Too many words.
Right? Does that sound made up or what? Imagine you're introducing me to your buddies. My buddy Adney, he won an Emmy Award. What do you win for? Outstanding creative achievement in interactive media within an unscripted program. What did he do? He was one of the hosts. Interesting.
Daily sports program, though. That's clean. That's what we want.
Daily's like, hey, dude, we're on all the time. Like MLB Tonight. Let's go. So, by the way, for that Emmy, me and Ben did not get Emmy awards. We got like a certificate. It's somewhere around my house somewhere. It just says, you know, this piece of paper signifies that Adnan Burke won an Emmy award for the Oscars All Access, and it has that long category. To me, you need the physical Emmy. You need to have it, right? Obviously. So I'm talking to my buddy Harold Reynolds. And again, for those who don't watch MLB Network, I totally get it. Me and Harold do the early show, which is the six for last year. And Greg Amster and Dan Plesak, of course, they do the late show. Greg is the Hefe, the ace of the staff, and they're 15 years. But for the actual Emmys, I said to Harold, we're going to go. He's like, nah. I go, what? He's got been there, done that. And in Harold's defense, he's been there and won the individual Emmy Award for Best Studio Analyst. I think he may have won for Best Play-by-Play Analyst. And he goes, now I just always lose to Herb Street. So like, I don't need to go anymore. Anybody, his buddy was a Herbie, big Reds fan. He's like, I'm not going to go. Now, Greg and Dan will probably be working because of course it'll be baseball. It's like a Tuesday night. So picture this. I don't believe we're going to win. I believe it's going to be SportsCenter or PTI. PTI almost always wins. But I did text my boss because after Will Folger, my producer told me, who was, of course, a big fan of Cinephile, a loyal supporter. I said, do you think I get to go? He goes, I would text the boss. So I text my boss, Mark Kaiapa. I go, hey, I've never been to the Emmys. Reese is nominated. Scott Van Pelt's nominated. I'd love to, you know, just go see those guys and maybe we win. And he goes, you're in. So I'm telling you right now, Cody, it's right around your birthday, actually. I believe the Emmys, your birthday is May 20th.
Yep.
And I believe the Emmys, it might be the day after. If MLB Tonight wins an Emmy, I will...
To cry,
I will moonwalk to the stage. I will do backflips off of it.
What's your speech? Did you write a speech?
Well, that's why I'd be like, I would be the most visible member. So even it's like when you know you win the best picture, the producer talks, but you still see you know Michael Keaton up there. So like even when I would go up there with the crew, and I'm sure my bosses are, and I would just jump them. I'd be like Kanye and Taylor Swift. I'd just grab the mic, and I'd be like, Cinephile, subscribe, rate, review.
Would you
welcome no. to Tangier? Like what? Like what is wrong with this guy? But we shall see. I it's not going to happen. But if it does happen, it's going to be a moment for the ages. It'll go viral.
You're going to be watching SVP go to the bathroom. Then you go.
Another topic, and I wanted your opinion on this. This is an etiquette question. I'm watching our buddy Ben Mankiewicz on TCM. And again, Matt Baker, who's unbelievable, one of our researchers, he's so smart. He's also an insane Bogart fan. He's the biggest Seinfeld fan you'll ever meet. So much so the other day with me, him, and Scott Spinelli, I was like mentioning episodes. He knew what seasons they were. I go to the contest. He goes, season four. I'm like, the rye bread, season seven. Like, he's just, wow. He's one of those guys. He's like, he's in on it. If you start quoting Seinfeld, he's right there with you. Now, he's late to the party, but he's now in on Cinephile. So last week after, a couple weeks ago, I thought I talked about Bogart. I said, oh, I love Bogart. I'm like, yeah, he goes, I've seen 58 movies. I'm like, hang on a second. You've seen 58 Humphrey Bogart movies? He goes, yeah, it's just one of my things. If it's on TCM, I go, this guy knows every Seinfeld episode known to man, and he's watched 58 Humphrey Bogart movies. Anyways, we're talking about, I've already lost my train of thought. What does that have to do with Humphrey Bogart? Oh, he tells me, he texts me, he goes, your boy Marty's on TCM. I said, great. Friday night, he's going to be on their programming with Ben Mankiewicz. So TCM, Turner Classic Movies, they'll have on somebody famous celebrity and say, okay. So if you had Chris Cody on, all right, Chris, give me two movies you're choosing tonight, you two of them. So it's Mank and Marty together. So Marty's picking two movies, one of which is a Robert Mitchum Western, whose name escapes me right now. But I remember, actually, I've seen it before because he referenced it as one of the inspirations for Killers of the Flower Moon. So if TCM aired it a year ago, I've already seen it. I think it's Blood on the Moon, something like that. The other title didn't look particularly interesting. It's like an Ava Gardner movie. So I text Mankiewicz and I'm like, how was it with Marty? I go, hey, first off, awesome job with Marty. I like the fact you called him Marty. He goes, oh, dude, it was such a thrill. The guy's the best. He's incredible. He goes, the Mitchum movie's pretty good. The other one's like, eh. I go, really? I go, you should have told Marty, like, hey, like, you kind of went one for two here. Like, you suggested two movies for our entire audience to watch. And one of them's kind of like, eh. He goes, it was a bit of a grind. But here's my etiquette question to you. You're a guest on a popular radio show. Here's Chris Coy, executive producer of Dan Lampert's show. At the end, when they say, Chris, thanks so much. You're big fans. Thanks for your time. What do you say? Thank you. Exactly. Or you say.
My bad. Thank you.
Yes. Or you see, you lip synced it. Oh my God. He's not even going to tell me. Or you do what KO did to me, which is my pleasure. The one that I don't think. And Marty did it to Mank. Mank and then goes, Marty, I can't thank you enough. This was incredible. Thank you so much. This was such a thrill. And he said, you're welcome. I'm with you. I don't think.
But you're Marty. Not Marty. Neither of us are Marty. Like, Marty knows when he sits down with someone, they are so honored that he's doing that.
Yeah.
There are a few people. Like, I actually think Marty's in, like, there's probably like 20 people in all of celebrity that I think have the credentials to say you're welcome.
Yeah.
And as a rule, I definitely agree with you. But I think in this spot, there's few people that have earned that right. And Marty kind of has. You're welcome.
Imagine you and Christy are out to dinner. It's an amazing meal. The waitress comes over. How was it? It was excellent. Hey, thank you so much. And she goes, you're welcome. You're like, excuse me? Like, we're just downgrading that tip immediately. Like, you're going to throw your wallet. You're welcome.
We're so honored that you're here. We're so honored that you would come here. You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming. Please do. Please come again. I can't thank you enough. My pleasure. My pleasure. Like, yeah. I like Kale. That's an old school. My pleasure. My mom always says, I'll call my mom Mother's Day. I go, Mom, you're the best mom in the world. Thank you so much. She goes, oh, honestly, it was my pleasure. Like, well, that's such a sweet thing to say. But you're welcome. Mom, thanks so much for being the best mom in the world. You're welcome. Doesn't have quite the same ring to it. All right, we're on the same page. Let's talk about movies, shall we? Sugar. How into this am I? Are you kidding me? This is right up my alley. The great John LeBoy, who gives me the Criterion app, and he heard me talking about In a Lonely Place, which is a film noir, says, you're going to check out this show called Sugar. It's with Colin Farrell. It's available on Apple Plus. So the story is this. Private investigator John Sugar examines the mysterious disappearance of Olivia Siegel, the granddaughter of a legendary Hollywood producer. It's from Mark Protasevich, who I've never heard of before. He created it. I have heard of the director of the first few episodes. His name is Fernando Morales. He is a terrific director. Of course, The City of God, which is a great, great film from Brazil, came out years ago. Colin Farrell's an actor I've always enjoyed. Of course, I loved him in The Banshees of Inisherin. He was with Pacino in The Recruit. I mean, listen, handsome as hell, Irish, dark, brooding, those eyes. And if ever there was a show created for me, I mean, this is a film noir. Right out of the gate, you know it is, because it's in Los Angeles and it's got the dark, seedy atmosphere, and it's got lots of voiceover, which is world-weary and existential and feelings of dread. And it's got shadowy figures who are slippery, and James Cromwell shows up. And of course, James Cromwell, he was in LA Confidential, which is one of the best film noirs of the last 30 years. So you also have Amy Ryan, who is such an independent queen. You don't want to get her in these independent movies. She's such a legend. Was great in Win-Win, the recent Paul Giamatti movie that I reviewed. Anna Gunn from Breaking Bad. She's in the show. I'm like, wow, we got Marge in the show. Also, speaking of Better Call Saul, Dennis Boutsakaris is in the show. I've always liked that actor because he's in one of my dad's favorite comedies, The Dream Team, with Michael Keaton. Who doesn't love Michael Keaton? So this is a hell of a cast. You got Colin Farrell, Amy Ryan, Anna Gunn from Breaking Bad, James Cromwell, who was also in Succession. You've got Dennis Boutsakaris, Better Call Saul, and it's basically a murder mystery. Now, I don't want to read reviews too much. I'm not going to give any spoilers to all of you. But I did read a review from someone I like who said it's 8 episodes. It goes every episode every Friday. But beware of a big twist in, I think, episode 6 or 7. And this reviewer basically said, it ruined the show for them. Like, oh my God. Like, this, could you imagine telling somebody, you're going to love this movie, but honestly, there's something that happens in the third act that I thought ruined the entire movie. You go, I don't think I'm going to bother with the movie then. Right?
That's too much of a spoiler. I don't want to know about a big twist coming.
Yeah. All you're going to tell me is that it's atmospheric, it's film noir, if you're into that kind of thing. Didn't always buy some of the plot twists, but perhaps it'll be worthy of your time. You go, okay. Like, didn't, if you just say, didn't work for me, but you might enjoy it. Okay, sure. That's where I'm at with it, because it's definitely up my alley. Like I said, it's featuring one of the most interesting aspects of it, what Fernando Morales does, is if there's a character driving down the street, literally, Colin Farrell is driving this beautiful car with his dog, and he turns a left. They'll cut to a shot of a film noir from the 1950s, black and white, of a guy driving down the street. It's literally a 3-second shot. And I go, oh, it's kind of interesting. At one point, he's ordering a drink. Colin Farrell is. And then they'll cut to a shot of Humphrey Bogart in a film noir ordering a drink. I love it. And so much so, I have to give you guys this breakdown. Again, this is very for TCM folks. But in episode one, they show clips of the following films. Kiss Me Deadly, 1955. The Big Heat, 1953. Johnny Guitar, 1954. The Strange Love of Martha Ivers, 1946. Episode 2, there's a quick clip of Dead Reckoning starring Humphrey Bogart. In a Lonely Place, which I just watched with my mom on her birthday. Incredible movie. I was so happy. I'm like, yes! In a Lonely Place, Made Sugar. Film noir starring Bogart and Gloria Graham. Knock on Any Door. Film noir starring Humphrey Bogart. Sunset Boulevard, which I watched last night, which we're going to review next week. One of the all-time great movies. Film noir starring Gloria Swanson, William Holden, directed by Billy Wilder. Also has a clip from Minnie Moskowitz. Comedy drama directed by John Cassavetes. Episode 3, Shibuya Crossing. The Killers, film noir starring Burt Lancaster, Ava Gardner. Clip of that. And Double Indemnity, one of the all-time greats. I just reviewed it. We just had two authors, Alan Silver and James Ursini. And Double Indemnity is in Sugar, film noir starring Barbara Stanwyck, Fred McMurray, and Edward G. Robinson. Episode 4, Starry-Eyed, featuring clips from The Thing, horror movie 1982. You ready for this? The Third Man, recently reviewed on Cinephile, film noir starring Joseph Cotten and Orson Welles, directed by Carol Reed. Cody, this is like watching a comedy, and then it had clips of like your favorite comedies. Like you're watching, like, hey, they just showed Airplane. Hey, they just showed Billy Madison. It's amazing how this show is geared towards me. I'm loving it. Before we go any further, we'll do our old movies now. I got to mention this because I thought we were going to do it on the Levitard show. And in fairness, Dan wanted to talk two questions of hockey. Then we went Steve Martin. But the big news last week, everyone's messaging me about Marty, Leo, Sinatra. So let's get into it. They have talked about this for years because people are expecting that I'm just like about to spontaneously combust. And yet I'm skeptical and I'll explain why. Marty's 81 years old. Now, life expectancy in American male is 78. My man's in good shape. I don't think he hits the gym, but like he doesn't eat a ton of pasta anymore. Has a glass of wine. I love Marty's energy. He's there. He's battled asthma his whole life. He's in good shape, but he's 81 years old. His next film, no doubt about it, is going to be about Jesus. You know one thing about Marty? You think of these gangster films and Goodfellas and Casino and The Irishman, but movies of faith and spirituality are so close to his heart. And you see those themes within those films, like Mean Streets. But when he wants to make like a Silence, when he wants to make The Last Temptation of Christ, he's doing it. So just because you hear the headline, Marty, Sinatra, Leo, I'm like, dude, he's making the Jesus movie first. He's 81. He's got to get independent financing for that. Now, how often does it take Martin Scorsese to make a movie? He's not like Ridley Scott where he makes a movie every year. It's like 2 or 3 years. So let's do the math on this. The Jesus movie, now he's 84. We've got a script going. Is Leo available? Jennifer Lawrence is available? Planning of a Gardener? It takes him like 6 months to shoot these things. Okay, then we got to edit it. Like, we're 87. Now, Kurosawa was making movies into his 80s. I'm God willing. Marty lives to 100. He lives to 1,000. But I'm not totally convinced, Cody, this is going to happen. Now, the idea of DiCaprio with Sinatra, of course. I mean, I love Sinatra. I thought about living in Hoboken when I moved to New Jersey. I said, just because Sinatra lives there. When I first moved here, I looked up Sinatra's birthplace. I was like, I'm going to see Sinatra's house. It's since been obliterated. For years they had it. It's been obliterated. There's now a condominium there called Frank's Place. And my wife had to talk me out of it. I said, I'm going to buy a condo. She goes, what? I go, I'm going to get a condo here and I'll rent it out. She goes, why? I go, I want to be able to say I have a place where Frank Sinatra lived. She goes, he didn't live here. This is a condominium. I go, no, but this is where the freaking greatest singer of the 20th century. This is where he walked. This is where he sang. This is where he took home girls. This is where he got drunk. This is where he got into fights. Just this land. This is a preposterous idea. I go, I'm going to look it up. Let's just say it was out of my price range. I think to get a place in Frank's place, you're going to be having a little bit of Frank dollars. But Point is, Sinatra, ripe for the picking. Here's the other major issue. Ready for this one? Tina Sinatra has to give her okay. And Tina Sinatra is going to look at the script and go, wait, what's this? You're going to show my dad when he was with his second wife, Ava Gardner, when he was cheating on his first... Wait, no, we're not doing that. No. You need the licensing to all of dad's music. Leonardo DiCaprio is not going to sing Fly Me to the Moon. You need my dad's music. And no. You're going to show my dad's... Oh, you're Martin Scorsese. Of course, you're going to show my dad's mob connections, him getting into fights and stuff. Like, no, we're not doing that. So I'm very skeptical. I hope it happens. Again, if it happens, I will moonwalk to the theater. I will do backflips out of it. I will see it 17 times. But a Marty, Sinatra, Leo, Jennifer Lawrence movie, color me a little skeptical. I hope I'm wrong.
Is it more because of the age or because of like the approval of the script? What are we like?
Honestly,
on the pie chart of reasons why you don't think it happens.
Excellent question. I'm going to go age 60, 40, the approval. Like, approval is a big thing, man. Like, you got to make sure, like, if I was Tina Sinatra, I want to see the script. I want to make sure this is getting done the right way. You are not going to be an unflattering portrait of my dad. And apparently they're focusing on when Ava Gardner was a homewrecker, like when she stole Frank away, or you could argue he left his wife, whatever it was. I'm like, it's going to be unsavory. So we'll see. I hope it happens. Let's do a little bit old right now. A couple of blurbs here on Sugar, by the way. I guess not all the reviews have been positive on Apple Plus. Alan Seppel of Rolling Stone, who I love, please. People want to see the show you're trying to make, not an endless warm-up for that show. Ouch, Seppenwall. Big Knicks guy, by the way. Nice win in game one. Ben Travers, IndieWire. It takes us back, sure, but only to when Colin Farrell couldn't be trusted to pick a winner. Honestly, I might have preferred True Detective Season 2. Ouch, that is terrible. I'm telling you right now, this show is way better than True Detective Season 2, which was atrocious. All right, Coming to America. How many times have you seen it, Cody? Three, four,
only,
five?
Only twice.
Only actually. Twice, okay.
Yeah, I was a late bloomer to it, but it's
about to say, a little bit before your generation. You're 36. It came out in 88, so you weren't. For me, I was 10 years old. It makes me think of my youth immediately. The VH tests I'm wearing out. For those who haven't seen it, here is the story. An extremely pampered African prince travels to Queens, New York, and goes undercover to find a wife that he can respect for her intelligence and strong will. It has everything you want in a great comedy. It has a captivating lead performance in Eddie Murphy, who is here at his most charismatic and his most likable, and the great laugh, of course. It's got an amazing supporting cast. Arsenio Hall is fantastic, of course, playing his sidekick. He's got many good lines as Semi. You got James Earl Jones. Immortal line. I always assumed you had sex with your bathers. I know I do. He's King Jaffe Joffer. Eric LaSalle, unbelievable. He's obviously Mr. Soul Glow. The whole cast. Garcelle Beauvais. Paul Bates is funny. Louis Anderson. I love the great Louis Anderson. Next year, I'm going to be on fries. It's a movie that I think is endlessly rewatchable and remains really funny. Some of these comedies you and I talked with, Steve Martin, they can be a little dated, but not with Coming to America. I just think it takes a classic premise and remains fresh. And that premise is what? Fish out of water, right? That's the story. Let's just take a guy from Africa. We'll put him in there and see what happens to Akeem. But it's got sweet moments to it. There's got romance. I mean, that scene at the game where girl's giving my hands up underneath his pants. Yes, yes. It's only halftime. It's my favorite part of the game. Again, and it all builds up to what? One of the greatest sequences ever in a movie, the barbershop scenes. And I wonder, I wish I could have been a fly on the wall, you know, when John Landis was directing it, as to how much he knew he had in the tank. Like, when did you know, like, okay, this is going to work? Eddie Murphy playing this old Jewish guy. He kicked Joe Louis's ass. Joe Louis is 16 years old. Like, that whole bit is amazing. And it just shows Eddie Murphy's talent. And of course, he would do it later on in The Nutty Professor. That great farting scene at the table. You've seen other actors try to ape that. But I'm telling you, Coming to America barbershop scenes, still as funny as anything you will ever see. And it holds up today. And again, Arsenio playing well. He did whip Joe Louis's ass. It's awesome to see. I would put it, like, people tell me, like, where do you rank it among all-time great comedies? Maybe it's tough to put a top 10, but I think it's up there. And I think for Eddie Murphy, certainly, it's amazing. It also has great lineage within other comedies, meaning you got the Duke brothers, Ralph Bellamy and Don Ameche from Trading Places. They show up in the way, which is hilarious. And Eddie Murphy, by the way, thought it was a great idea. Cuba Gooding Jr. shot a scene in which his character tells Clarence he does not have the money to pay for his haircut. Clarence responds by shaving a bald patch out of the boy's hair. To Cuba Gooding's disappointment, the scene was deleted. The name of the fictional African country the main characters are from is called Zamunda. The name was taken from a Richard Pryor routine where he referred to a fictional African tribe of the same name. The writers had originally named it Zamunda, but director John Landis had it changed to Zamunda. Although John Landis and Eddie Murphy had been friends since they worked together on Trading Places, they did not get along on this film. Reports about the reasons vary, but mostly there was friction over past disagreements. Landis was supportedly still hurt. Murphy had not supported him after a fatal accident on the set of Twilight Zone, the movie. And Murphy vowed to never work with Landis again. The two later reconciled. Murphy did ask Landis to direct Beverly Hills Cop 3. If only we could have been spared that cinematic atrocity on Beverly Hills Cop 3. 5 lawsuits over the movie? How about that? Most of the dance performed by the Royal Dancers before presenting Prince Akeem's Queen to be a high-tempo rendition from Thriller. John Amos, amazing. His character, Cleo McDowell, shamelessly copies McDonald's. He had a long history with McDonald's in real life. At one point, Amos worked at the first ever McDonald's restaurant in Canada. He also starred in a famous song and dance McDonald's commercial in 1971, Grab a Bucket and Mop. The scene when Cleo stares strangely at Akeem trying to use a bucket and a mop is an in-joke reference to this commercial. According to John Landis, it was his idea to have Eddie Murphy wear makeup to play a Jewish man as a sort of payback for Jewish comedians wearing blackface in the early 1900s. Writer Barry W. Blaustein consulted with his father for what a Jewish man would actually say. You also have Frank Oz's real name at one point, Mr. Frank Oznovich. One more here for you. Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall revealed during their March 2021 visit to Jimmy Kimmel Live, Louis Anderson was cast in Coming to America only because the studio mandated a white comedian appear in the 1988 comedy. According to the actress, Paramount went so far as to give them a list of 3 white actors to choose from. They chose Anderson because Murphy and Hall were fans of stand-up comedy. They didn't reveal who the other 2 options were. Thankfully, life has changed since then. But hey, can I have a white guy in here? All right. I guess we like Louis. All the play characters in The Barbershop played by Eddie Murphy, Arsenio Hall, Clint Smith, and the aforementioned Cuba Gooding Jr. Last one for you. John Landis had a bad reputation due to a string of flops and manslaughter charges for an accident during the filming of The Twilight Zone, the movie. In an interview with Playboy, Eddie Murphy said, yes, he'd done 4 effed up movies in a row. I knew he'd spent a lot of money on his trial. I went to Paramount and said, I want to use Landis. But he had reservations. His career was effed up. I said, I'm going to use Landis. I like the guy. I used to always say the one fun experience I had with a director, and I've worked with directors I really liked, Martin Brest, Walter Hill, Tony Scott, was with Landis because he plays around a lot on the set. I made Paramount hire him. Eddie Murphy's demands included $1,500 a week for his personal trainer, round-the-clock chauffeur service, a valet, and $1,000 a week for his brother to appear as his stand-in. It's pretty good stuff, man. I can do this all day as far as the Nuggets are concerned. But yeah, great, great film. And also, by the way, I got to mention this. The first time Eddie Murphy and makeup artist Rick Baker worked together, they would re-team on Nutty Professor, Life, Nutty Professor 2, The Clumps, and Norbit. Rick Baker is an absolute legend. I had to get that in. All right, Bowfinger. Bowfinger's great, man. I love Bowfinger. What's great about it is that you get Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy both working at the peak of their talents. I mean, both these guys are so funny. And, you know, Martin's idea of playing this producer who's willing to do anything to get his movie made is just so ripe for satire. And what he does is he gives Eddie Murphy not just one, but 2 great characters. And that's really indicative of how talented Eddie Murphy is that he's able to nail both of these guys. The story? When a desperate movie producer fails to get a major star for his bargain basement film, he decides to shoot the film secretly around him. And so Eddie Murphy's playing Kit Ramsey, but also the brother. And, you know, Kit's character is arrogant and loudmouth and completely seduced by Scientology. Love the jabs at Scientology. Of course, they're completely ripping on Tom Cruise and those nut jobs. Terrence Stamp, of course, plays Terry Stricter, Mind F, as they call it. Robert Downey Jr., great early role as well. Early in the movie, I should say, him and Steve Martin together. When I hear that idea, I just get very, very excited. But again, it's great satire. And Heather Graham.
She's so great funny once she figures out. I love this movie, by the way. She's
right?
Great.
Bowfinger's one of your all-time classics. What do you love about this movie? Tell me.
I just love the fact that it's like it's very relatable of like a guy, like everybody kind of wants to be, like doesn't everybody, like maybe because it's me, like I've wanted to write movies. Like This is like a guy with no funding, like just making a movie. It's just classic. And like you said, what is the name of the Eddie Murphy character that's in the, like the one with the braces?
Jeff.
It is just, that is such great acting from Eddie Murphy in that movie.
What's crazy is you're right, especially that scene where he's crossing the highway is amazing. Oh, God. Like, amazing. I got to tell you this little nugget. It's reportedly based on a real incident in 1927. A Russian filmmaker covertly shot footage of the vacationing Mary Pickford and fashioned an entire film around the footage, creating the illusion that Pickford was actually starring in this Russian film. In reality, the 1927 film, Poceliu, Mary Pickford, featured cameos from Mary Pickford and Douglas Fairbanks. They participated in the film as a goodwill gesture towards the emerging Russian film industry. Amazing that that's how Steve Martin got this inspiration Film was shot during Eddie Murphy's busy schedule. Third time he worked on that was produced by Imagine Entertainment. Now, Professor Remick is also doing Life. Had a very tight window, but they got it done. He ad-libbed the line, "You're doing great. You're going to be a star," in the scene where Daisy is topless. The character of Daisy, played by Heather Graham, a thinly veiled jab at Anne Heche. Like Daisy, Heche is from Ohio. Also like Daisy, Heche was briefly romantically involved with a significantly older man, Steve Martin. Daisy's last lines about being involved with the most powerful lesbian in Hollywood are a reference to Heche's relationship at the time with Ellen DeGeneres. Like the Steve, by the way, Anne Heche not mentioned in the documentary. I did want to throw that at you. What would it be like to you? You dated a woman and she ended up being a lesbian.
Honestly, I have two examples of that in my history.
Really?
I have two girls. Like, my first girlfriend ever, this was like not even a real relationship when I was probably in like middle school.
Yeah.
Is now a lesbian with a wife and a daughter. And I, and a girl I dated when I was like in my 20s, I've fallen out of touch with her, but at one point she was dating a girl after me. Like, I don't know if she still is a lesbian, but yeah.
So wow.
Two of those.
If it happened, the middle school thing, fine. Maybe it was young, whatever. But this, in your 20s, this must have had an impact on you. I dated a woman who now, rather than date other men, would rather date women.
I broke them.
Yeah, I guess you could take it as a comp and go, they can never top me, so they might as well just stick with their own.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Or I was so terrible that they were just like, I'm done with all men.
Well, put it this way. Imagine... I can't even imagine. But you and your wife break up and you go, I'm going to start dating men. Like, what would her reaction be? Like, oh my God, you're gay? I'm like, I'm not gay. I'm just.
Crazier things have happened.
Perhaps. Eddie Murphy became interested in this movie when he heard he would be working with Steve Martin, of whom he's a huge fan. When Murphy sat down with Martin and director Frank Oz, the first thing he said was that Kit Ramsey should be a black action superstar. Oz then asked if that meant he was making the film, and Murphy said yes. Murphy later joked that Eddie's audition was very good.
That scene where Eddie Murphy's looking at the topless Heather Graham and he's just like, you're going to be a star. It's so good.
You mentioned Jif. It was Eddie Murphy's idea for Jif Ramsey to wear braces, have his ears stick out. He insisted on not wearing prosthetics makeup when it came to filming his scenes as Jif. That's a good point. It's still Eddie Murphy. He's not wrapped up in latex. It's just give me braces and the ears. And after that, I'll figure it out.
So good.
The Los Angeles freeway shut down for 2 days for that sequence where Jif runs across the freeway. So that was in Los Angeles. I was impressed they got that kind of juice. Like, hey, we're shooting a movie called Bowfinger. 2 days. We needed the LA freeway. I'm like, okay. Eddie Murphy part actually written for Keanu Reeves. Whoa. How different would this movie
totally different movie.
Although Eddie Murphy ran across the Los Angeles freeway without the use of a stunt double, for the sequence in which Jif runs across the Los Angeles freeway, the speeding cars were later added in digitally. Frank Oz encouraged improvisation during select scenes, and occasionally the result wound up in the film. Some instances of this are Robert De Niro saying, and all this, while flipping through the script of Chubby Rain, Eddie Murphy asking his manager to find him a retarded slave role so he can win an Academy Award, and Steve Martin saying, it could have worked after Chubby Rain was shut down. Steve Martin came up with the idea for the film 13 years before the film was released and had not written the screenplay for over 10 years. Again, it's a hell of a movie. One more for you. Eddie Murphy ad-libbed the line, it's not funny, for the scene where Kit exposes himself to the Laker girls. Just loves those Laker girls. Fourth film, by the way, Steve Martin and Frank Oz have worked together. Instead of Kit Ramsey's mansion was an empty mansion in Pasadena. And lastly, Kit goes to a place called Mindhead, where he pays to tell the secrets to a religious cult leader, which being hooked up to a machine, this is a reference to Scientology. As I said, great satire there from Steve Martin. It's fantastic. Last thing, originally entitled Bowfinger's Big Thing. I like that title too. And the ending, all-time classic. UPS guy in slow motion, giving the delivery. I was on the floor laughing in the theater. It's so, so perfect. All right, speaking of perfect, our special guest from way back, my man Jeff Garlin.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to Cinephile, the Adnan Virk movie podcast. A real thrill to have Jeff Garlin here with us in studio.
I worked with Troy Gentile, your co-star on the Goldbergs. Yes. We were correspondents for Oscar.com.
Yes.
If you think it's crazy that an ESPN sportscaster was one of the correspondents, how about your buddy, who is so funny on the Goldbergs? And here we are. We're breaking down Moonlight and the cinematography of La La Land. Like, it was a trip.
He's an adventure. And by the way, I say that with great love. I am so fond of him, and I love him so much, but he is truly an adventure.
I texted him, and I said, hey, Jeff's coming. He goes, what? He goes, he didn't tell me. And I'm like, well, maybe you guys are on hiatus right now or something.
No, I talked to him and stuff, but if I had known that he had done that with you, then I would have texted him and just say, hey, man.
Well,
he's so sweet. He is so ridiculously sweet that any nonsense from him is okay.
Well, he's got this great energy. Like when we're
amazing energy.
I don't know what it's like with rehearsals with the Goldbergs, but rehearsals for the Oscars, like that guy was dialed in. Like,
no, he's dialed in the same way.
And he said, he goes, he come to the set sometime. He goes, we're in Culver City. I go, hey, I'll bring my whole family.
If you want to bring your family, please do.
My cousins are gigantic fans, and so this is a question from them. They go, ask Jeff, what is it like to do most of his acting with his pants off?
Okay. Well, first of all, it's not most, but it's a lot of acting. As a matter of fact, let me just give you an idea.
Sure.
So I get to work in the morning. I've read my scenes at night before I go to bed.
Yeah.
And that's my process. Then I come in, and when I go to makeup, I bring my scenes with me. So when I go in my trailer, I'm not really like that focused on what's been going on.
Right.
And when on the counter in my trailer, I see the tidy whities, I get depressed. I'm not hugely depressed.
Right.
It's like, oh, I'm spending the day. Right. And it's not even, first off, I don't wear tidy whities.
Of course.
I did when I was a little kid.
Right.
They're not regular tidy whities.
Right.
They're two pairs of tidy whities sewn together with like a piece, you know, like the thing, like the foam, like in sports uniforms, like for your knees, knee pad type thing.
Right, right.
They have that over my wiener. So the reason they have it over my wiener is because the person, the what do they call that? Standards and practices are like, I see movement, I see shadows. So it's
like the 1950 Hollywood code of conduct.
Yes,
like it's a little too
racy. And then I have my legs get a coat of makeup on them. So there's a process, and then I'm like that all day. So I'll walk over to craft service, get food.
Right.
I'll talk to people. I'm not thrilled when there's guests on the set.
Right.
On underwear days. Sometimes I'll make them, you know, not clear the set, but enough of them hanging out.
Right. Can I get a robe?
Yeah.
The other thing, too, the episodes I've seen the Goldberg, a lot of yelling at the kids. How much of that was your own influence, or did you just go, you know what? This isn't anything like what I'm like as a dad or what my
It's nothing like
was.
What I'm like as a dad.
Right.
As a dad, I mean, certainly I've yelled before.
Yeah, we all have.
But I'm full of affection and love for my kids.
Yeah.
My boys are 17 and 21. Yeah. They let me kiss them as much as I want, hug them as much as I want.
Right.
I tell them I love them all the time.
Right.
And this guy is based on Adam Goldberg's dad.
Right.
And he's kind of a curmudgeon and doesn't show affection that easily.
Right.
So very different than the way I am.
Billy Bob Thornton told me as an actor, sometimes it's fun to do that. Like, I love the movie The Man Who Wasn't There.
Right.
And he asked about it. He goes, I'm actually a really chatty guy.
Right.
So that movie, when I don't say a word and I'm just this taciturn character, when it was cut, I'm just yappity-yap the whole time. So I'm sure for you, you're like, hey, I'm playing this guy who's completely unlike me. It's fun to step into that skin, but that's not Jeff Garlin.
I don't know in terms of it being fun.
Right.
It's fun working.
Right.
You know, and I like being just me, too, just as much. That's why I do stand-up.
Right.
So there are no characters where I go into.
Right.
I suppose if I played a real bad guy, that might be fun.
Right.
Like a real killer. I did that once on not CSI, on
NCIS? No.
Law and Order.
Law and Order.
One
of those long-running franchises.
Law and Order with the letters. And I was a rapist and a murderer.
Oh, those would be like...
That was fun.
Right, because you get to take a nice shower and clean this filth off of that character.
Well, no, I didn't take the filth off, because at no point am I believing that I'm that character.
Right. I cannot wait for Curb. I know you guys have been filming the episodes. A great excuse with you coming here was I got to go back and tell my wife I had homework to do and go back and watch Curb episodes.
Oh, yeah.
I think I know this is tough to say the best one, but I think Palestinian Chicken
is your favorite.
Really reaches a level of comic hilarity.
I will say that's our most popular episode.
Right?
Yeah.
You call Larry a survivor. What is the exact term? Oh, a social assassin.
Yeah, assassin. Yeah. Outside of the chicken place.
Why do you think that one resonates with people?
I don't analyze it.
Right.
I'm just happy something resonates.
Right.
My favorite episode is one called Wandering Bear, where Cheryl's vagina itches.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Larry and I are obsessed with Girls Gone Wild. That's my favorite one.
Yeah, when you pop in the tape, you guys are so excited.
Yeah, we're very excited. I know. Yep.
Well, yeah, because you know what? I love the Paul Schrader movie, Autofocus, with Willem Dafoe and Paul Schrader, and that's the line. I think Larry says, or maybe you said, you
no, go,
he goes, this, says, is like, this is like an autofocus. Focus, like, yeah. How many people are getting that reference? But I loved it. Autofocus is great.
See, I'm a big believer in just doing whatever you think is funny, and you hope that people get it.
Right.
I don't think that you tailor a show like, people are going to love this.
Right.
You do the best. See, that's what individual great comedy, that's how it becomes great, because you do something that's personal, and it taps into people, and you didn't count on it.
Well, and that's why I honestly, you have to explain this to me, because I don't get it. I've seen every interview with you and Larry and Richard Lewis, and you go, yeah, we have an outline, and then just go. But how is that actually possible? Like, how do you go 23 minutes? How do you have plot lines? Like, doesn't like a jigsaw puzzle, one scene has to lead to another line. So if you're ad-libbing so much, how do you
jigsaw
do that?
Jigsaw puzzle is when I've done Arrested Development.
Which I love. You and Aaliyah Shawcott. Great.
Thank you. But I've said to Mitch Hurwitz, especially the last season that they just did on Netflix, I had to film so many things that I had no idea what I was doing and why I was doing it.
Right.
And he said, do you want me to explain it to you? And I said, no, don't. When I watched
Mitch,
the show,
figure it out.
Because they also had a board with like yarn connecting cards and things. And I said, you've combined calculus with comedy. As far as Curb, it's an outline and we just do it. As a matter of fact, I do almost every take differently.
So it's literally one page outline.
Seven pages.
Okay, seven pages. So there's some development, but then different takes, try different lines.
The dialogue is pretty much always different. Yeah.
That's insane. Like, that takes such trust in your guys around you. For Larry to go, no, Garland's genuinely funny. He'll think of something funny. Lewis is funny. Like,
he writes a funny scenario. There's not a lot I have to do except just dive into the truth of whatever's going on.
But I think Jeff is like the best friend anybody could have. Like, no matter what, Larry gets in trouble with, exactly. Like,
yeah, I do stand behind him. That is, people ask me if there's a character trait, and I go, that's it.
Steadfastly loyal.
Steadfastly
loyal. Like, if he's wrong, you'll still defend
him. Because I think that he's not about anything.
Right.
The Jeff Green character.
Right.
But he is about, Larry's the best, and I'm going to protect him.
I love the masseuse episode, too. Like, he comes back and he tells you, and you're like, why'd you tell her to stop? Because it was five pumps. You're like, that was the whole point.
Yeah. Yeah, pots. He couldn't say stop. He said pots.
Handsome is your new... Oh, wait. When is Curb coming out, by the way? I know it's...
In the fall.
Okay. So in the fall, we can look forward to that on HBO.
Yeah.
Season 10 episodes.
Yes.
Whole crew's back together again.
Everything's better back again and better than ever.
How excited were you when you got the call from Larry that, hey, we're going to do this again? You in?
There was no excited because we'd been discussing it for a long time.
Right.
And it was just sort of like coming closer, coming closer, coming closer.
Right.
So it wasn't a, what? Really? It was like, oh, good.
Yeah. Okay, great. Strap it on again. Handsome, new movie on Netflix. Yeah. I know you loved Columbo growing up. I don't know if you do a Peter Falk impression.
I do not.
Okay.
But it's the first Netflix mystery movie. And it comes on May 5th.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. I can't wait to see it. What was it about mysteries that appealed to you?
I just enjoyed Columbo. I enjoyed Banachek, McMillan and wife.
Right.
I even enjoyed Cannon.
Right.
Barnaby Jones. I mean, I just liked, you know, crime shows from the 70s.
Right.
Now, by the way, this is not imitating that. It's my own thing, and it's definitely different, but that's what it harkens back to.
Netflix, the place to be now. Like, I'm a huge Scorsese fan. The fact that The Irishman with him, De Niro, Pacino, is not going to a major studio, but Netflix for $105 million. And I think it's because the deal fell apart with Paramount, and then they said to Marty, hey, listen, you're the greatest living director. Do what you want. Here's the money. Just go. If it's 3 hours or 4 hours, go for it.
Right.
If that's the edge Netflix has over all these other studios.
It's going to make a great movie.
Right. Like, no matter what, it's going to be great. How are you? I know you're a huge Cubs fan, by the way.
Yes.
Can we get Joe Madden on Curb? Like, Bill Buckner
I've already tried.
Joe's got to be in. He's an irreverent.
No, it's not a matter of that. It was when we were shooting, was during spring training, and two different dates didn't work. As a matter of fact, I got to check the Cubs schedule,
because
we have three more days that we're shooting that he might be able to. That it's a long shot. I don't think he's going to be able to. But if we do another season, who knows?
Also, because Madden's just like, he's a centric guy. Like, he's the best.
He's the best guy. I want to be best friends with him. We're acquainted. I do text with him.
He texts
with
him. That's something.
And he says things like groovy. But,
he's such
I
a cool
dig
guy.
Him. Big time. I want to be his best friend. Is that wrong?
Where were you when the Cubs won? I mean, this is the moment every Chicago sports
fan. I was at Wrigley Field for the games that were there.
Awesome.
And then I had to go back to work on the Goldbergs. They were nice enough to make sure I got out for that Friday game.
Right.
So I had to be back. So I watched the game in my home.
Right.
And I screamed, "Oh my God," while weeping over and over and over again.
It's the best. Yeah. That's why sports is the best, right? Like that cathartic moment, you can't get that anywhere else.
And that is what's unfortunate for me is I know that I've already experienced the greatest sports moment of my lifetime. For me.
You can never top that.
It's already done.
Right.
So it's done. But my dad never had that moment.
Right.
And a lot of dads and grandfathers and great-grandfathers never had that moment. Right. So I'm lucky I have that moment. So even if they win this year, it won't pass this.
Right. That is true.
And by the way, I don't know that they will win this year or next year or the year after. But the thing about the Cubs now that I love is every year we have a chance.
No question.
And that is the difference.
Right. We got Bryant. We got Rizzo. Yeah, we got all these young studs. We're going to be in it no matter what.
Yes.
I just read this book about Letterman, and he's a fascinating guy, right? Because there's nobody who's more talented but more self-loathing. Right. And they talk all about talk show hosts. They talked about Conan. And it made me think about how your friendship with Conan, the fact you guys lived together at one point. And just like literally when you take a step back now, how crazy everything was, what happened with The Tonight Show. With your friendship with him, how much did you keep in touch with him through that, or was it just one of those?
The Tonight Show with Leno?
Right. It was so
insane. Well, so funny you bring that up. I was seeing a clip of Leno on Jimmy Fallon the other day, and I just thought, it's too bad. Right. It's too bad, because here's what I remember, and I saw this, and you can look it up on the internet.
Sure.
Was Leno saying, "Conan, the show's yours.
Yeah.
It's time to step down. It's over." And I thought, well, that's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And you can change your mind, but you got to do something else.
Right.
And the truth is, Conan, to me, is not a Tonight Show host guy.
Right.
I was loyal to him, and I wouldn't go back on the Tonight Show.
Right.
When Jay came back,
I read that, yeah.
But Conan's an edgy, sort of guy. To me, he's a 12:30 guy.
Right.
To me, he's a...
He was Letterman late night.
TBS
right.
guy.
Right,
HBO guy.
Yes.
He should have a show on HBO. I mean, that's what he is more to me than a mainstream sort of host type thing.
Right.
But what they did to him, I thought was terrible. Yeah. Even moving it back a half hour. What? It's just such a stupid thing.
It's just so surreal.
But I did keep in touch with him.
Yeah.
And I was supremely loyal.
Yeah. Well, I thought that was great of you because, like you said, I understand the show business. Like, if Leno said, "Listen, it's not my fault that they wanted to push me out and then I had to go do this 10 o'clock show," which I wasn't comfortable with.
Right.
But to your point, hey, when the thing falls apart, you don't go back and then jump in the house again.
No, you don't.
Right. You go, "Hey, I'm sorry it didn't work out." If you don't want Conan, that's one thing, but I'm going to go.
But my gut feeling is that NBC contacted him
and just said, "Hey, listen, we don't think Conan's
really
working out.
We're not really happy with what Conan's
Would you be
doing.
Willing to come back?" Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and he didn't hesitate.
Makes it difficult. Yeah. Triumph the Insult Comic Dog. You're right. That's tough at 11:30, but at 12:30, it's great. I'm from Toronto originally. I know you've done Just for Laughs in Toronto and Montreal, if I'm not mistaken.
No, I've never done Montreal. They've never... Well, actually, when I needed it, they did not have me. And now that it means nothing to me, I get asked quite often, and I will say what I'll say every time. No, thank you.
Right.
Well, why do I want to go to Montreal? What reason? I'm living in Los Angeles. Are you moving the event to New York City?
Right.
By the way, Montreal is one of the few places I've never been.
Yeah.
I know it's a lovely place. Yeah. I don't want to go.
Well, you're much like English Canada then, because most English Canadians have animosity towards French Canada, so you're fine.
Yeah.
Handsome's on Netflix May 5th. The Goldbergs on Wednesdays. I can't wait to text Troy and tell him we get to hang out. And
very exciting,
I'll come to Culver City sometime. And we'll
please do. It'd be a delight to have you.
I'm really hoping. I just keep thinking of a Joe Madden, Alan Curb. It's like the comic potential.
And we had two different things they would have been great for. And
right.
You know, we'll try again.
Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks again to Jeff Carl. That was fantastic. Thanks to Chris Cody, the entire crew. Cinephile continues. Next week, I'm going to go check out Civil War, right? That's the big new movie here. Alex Garland.
I heard it's bad.
Kirsten Wiig, I'm going to go check out that this week. So hopefully we'll have a review of that. Maybe check out Monkey Man, Dave Patel's action movie. Lots of good stuff out there. We'll get after it. And we'll continue here in Snuff. I'll find some guests from way back in the playback. We'll find something here to entertain the folks. Please go to Apple Podcasts. You can subscribe, rate, and review. Go Cats, and I'll see you at the movies.